What's up, everyone? Welcome to Reality Rehap-Ups, the little corner of Rob Has a Podcast, where we give you little bonus coverage of all of the great things happening in the reality TV universe. My name is Jessica Leese, and I have some amazing race coverage for you this week. I am here today with a man who is amazing race royalty. In fact, you may have seen him at the starting line at the beginning of Amazing Race 27. I'm here with the season one champion, Mr. Brennan Swing. Hi, Brennan. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for that great intro. I'm excited, ready to talk about another season of Amazing Race.
Now, you have been following the show pretty much all along, haven't you?
Yeah, I've been a huge fan. Really, right from the obviously from the beginning, being on the first season. But over the years, I know plenty of racers who were on their season don't watch the show anymore. But I've watched from the beginning, so I love the show, and I'm now just a big fan.
Yeah, that's really cool. I know, like, I asked people to give me questions, and everybody had the same question. They want to hear all about how you think the show has changed over the years. Like, what are the good changes? What are the bad changes? What do you wish they'd kept? What are you glad they got rid of?
Well, I think one of the easy answers to that, as far as what I don't like, I don't like some of the changes they've made over the years, where one team can affect the outcome. Meaning, of course, in some of the early to mid seasons, they had the yield. Nowadays, they have the U-turn. I don't really like those because, of course, I'm thinking about it from a racer's perspective. And one of the great things about Amazing Race is that you have your destiny in your own hands. Obviously, Survivor, Big Brother were a couple of the first reality shows. Amazing Race came out soon thereafter, and one of the changes people liked was that it wasn't a popularity contest where you were getting voted out by other people. You were the one that affected your outcome. Now, obviously, you can have things like bad cab drivers get bad directions, but ultimately, you were still the one choosing that cab, or you were the one asking for those directions. So I didn't like it when they made some of those changes. And certainly, there have been times in recent seasons where you've seen a U-turn. The last team, if it's a double U-turn, say, that gets U-turned, it's almost a foregone conclusion that once their face is on that board, they're going home. And I think that's kind of a rough way to go out.
Yeah, that is actually, it adds a little bit of mean-spiritedness almost, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that's another way to, in comparing Amazing Race to other reality shows. You know, people have always said Amazing Race is kind of the classy reality show, and a lot of the other shows are all about backstabbing, and obviously I just got done watching the full season of Big Brother. You know, obviously everybody's lying the whole time. Amazing Race, there's not a lot of that. There is some gameplay. There's some things people may do that might make them the villain or something like that, but it's really not the same, and it really does bring out some mean-spiritedness. And sometimes it actually makes teams the bad guys that don't mean to be, especially when I just mentioned the W turn. You get a team that gets U-turned, maybe by somebody who was mean, and then they turn around and have to U-turn a second team just to save themselves.
Yeah, it's true. And I think one of the things that's always struck me about The Amazing Race is how close every cast winds up. And especially, like, from the beginning, you guys were such a tight-knit group, and you all seemed to be friends. You were on an adventure together, even if you were competing, and even if you did disagree from time to time.
Very true. I mean, taking away the fact that it's a television show, that you're competing for $1 million, any of that, and it really is just the adventure of a lifetime. And you're getting a chance to experience it not only with your teammate, but also with these strangers that you've never met before, and the range of emotions that you go through, and just this huge, huge experience. And speaking from my experience and looking back on our season, what made ours even a little bit more interesting is originally The Amazing Race was supposed to be a summer television show. So we filmed during March and April for a summer premiere date. And then they liked it so much, they decided to hold it for the fall. So our cast had to go about 5 months between the end of filming and the beginning of it airing on television. And during that time, we couldn't talk to anybody else about it. We had to keep it secret. And because of that, we actually, a lot of us became even closer. A group of us got together in Vegas during the summer before it premiered. And I'm still great friends, even 14 years later, with some of the other cast members from my season. And then, of course, going forward, it's almost like a fraternity or a sorority. You've got new members coming in every year, and 27 seasons later, I've gotten to know people from, I would say, I think every single cast. At some point, I've met somebody and have become friends with a lot of people over the years that have gotten to share this incredible experience.
It's like the best secret club ever.
It is, and it's one that a lot of people want to join. Over the years, I've gotten to be friends with a lot of people from other reality shows, and everyone always says, oh, The Amazing Race, that's the one I really want to do.
Yeah, I have heard that a lot. And now, our own Rob Cesternino said that when he first moved to L.A., he was part of that little fraternity of reality people that hung out with you guys, and he sends his regards. He wasn't able to get on the call today.
Well, sorry to hear that, but of course, tell him I said hi, and I do remember those days. It was actually, it's interesting because now that it's been so many years, and there have been hundreds and hundreds of people that have been on all these different reality shows that have all become friends and so forth over the years. But back at the beginning, when there weren't that many of us, it really was kind of a small, tight-knit community. And I remember when Rob made the big move out to Los Angeles, and it was great to have him out here.
Yeah, he is a rare person that's managed to parlay his reality TV love into not only an appearance on a show, but a whole like media empire at this point. It's kind of amazing.
Well, it's actually funny you say that. When I was thinking about today's call, I was thinking about exactly that. I'm like, it's amazing that Rob has still been able to continue this, because I know even though he was on a very early season of Survivor, I know at that point he was already a huge fan of reality TV. And of course, that's something here, not a lot nowadays. People on all the different reality television shows, because so many of them have been long running, you get people on the show that are, of course, in Big Brother, they always call them super fans. One of the couples on the premiere of Amazing Race, the couple that went for the fast forward, they talked about how much they've been wanting to get on the show for years. So I guess Rob was one of the original super fans.
Yeah, and it's really interesting, especially with regard to The Amazing Race. And this is something, obviously, you couldn't have been a super fan of the show because it had never aired before. But how much do you think that really helps you?
It's a good question. On The Amazing Race, I don't know if it helps a lot. I think it does, in that you are prepared for some of the types of challenges you may have, especially at the end, the way they've changed things up in recent seasons to where they well, not even recent seasons, really. The first few seasons, maybe they didn't do it, but since then, they always try to throw in some kind of task right before the finish line. A lot of times it's mental. You got to think about what's happened, putting together a puzzle or something like that, what's happened throughout the race. And I guess being ready for some of those types of challenges, if you've been watching all the seasons, you're going to know that you're going to get something like that. At the same time, you also, if you've been watching watching all the shows over the seasons, you're going to see mistakes that teams have made and just maybe not do things that somebody who hasn't watched as much, and I'm going to say as much because I'm assuming anybody who gets cast on the show, even if they've never seen it before, I'm hoping they at least go out and watch it on Hulu or buy the DVDs or something like that. But I think it can certainly give you a leg up if you've watched all the seasons.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so let's switch gears. Let's talk about this episode in particular, and let's just go back to the starting line, because we were very excited. We were talking about it on our recap on Friday night. This is a rare Rob Frisbee sighting, because we hear from you a lot, Brennan, but Rob's kind of keeping it on the down low, but you guys kind of had a little mini reunion here for the starting line. Do you guys still talk quite a bit, though?
Oh, we do. I mean, Rob's still my best friend. I see him all the time. I guess I live in Santa Monica. He lives in West Hollywood. For those of you listening that aren't from L.A., that's about a half-hour drive. So, you know, we live a little apart from each other, but I see him all the time. We're still very, very close. But for whatever reason, over the years, I am the one who I enjoy going to the different Amazing Race events or other reality TV things, some of the big charity events, of course, that they have. I've attended a lot of those, and I just enjoy being around all the different people from reality television and meeting the fans and so forth. It's just kind of my personality. Rob, on the other hand, that's just not his thing. And it is really funny when people do see us. In fact, we were at a Los Angeles Galaxy soccer game a month or so ago, and somebody recognized us and came up to us, and they're like, I didn't think that Rob existed. I've seen Brennan at things before. And it's almost become kind of a joke. And it was really funny for the start line, because I always still ask Rob if he wants to come to different events, and 90% of the time he says no. So I asked him about this, and he gave me a maybe, which a lot of times maybe means no. But in the end, he said, and you know what, I'd love to come out. So he went out, and I know afterwards he was really happy that he did, because it was fun just being there, being around the fans, being around the contestants, seeing people in production we hadn't seen in years. And then, of course, just being around the energy of the starting line of the Amazing Race.
Yeah, so it's a lot of the same production people, isn't it? Like, even from 15 years ago?
Well, I was going to say for the, I guess we'll say the main people. Of course, Bertram Van Munster, Elise Doganeri, the co-executive producers and co-creators. They've been there since the beginning. Of course, Gil's been there since the beginning. A few other people. At the same time, a lot of the, I guess we'll say, younger producers and a lot of the cameramen and sound men, that were on our season, that were kind of getting their start back then, were kind of new to production, they've moved on to different things. So there's been a lot of turnover, but at the same time, there are definitely some people that are still around. Lynn Stillman, the casting director, she was there, so it was great to see her. So it was a little bit of a mini reunion for us, for sure.
Yeah, and also, apparently, many people from the Secret Society of Former Racers, you didn't really get to see this from the episode, but from my understanding, you had a good dozen former racers there apart from you and Rob.
We did. There were a lot of us there, most of them from recent seasons, although one of the funny coincidences, Alex Boylan, who won season two, who I'm very, very good friends with, he lives in Marina Del Rey. The start was in Venice Beach. He happened to be going on a jog that morning. I had told him about the start, but he just forgot about it. It was a Monday morning. He forgot. He was going on a jog, and he saw all this production going on, and all of a sudden the light bulb went off, and he came over. He actually, because he was all sweaty, he wasn't good for TV. He wasn't there for the actual start, but he was there. Of course, there were a number of racers. Laura, the winner of season 26, there were a lot of season 26 racers there, and then just a number of them. And you're right, I actually felt a little bit bad that they did acknowledge us at the starting line, and you couldn't even really see anybody else of the former racers who were there, but there was a good crew there.
Yeah. Well, and at least you got a shout out, because a year ago when they did the starting line in Times Square, the camera just kind of swept across the crowd and you could sort of make out Frank, and I think Luke was there, and that was about it. They didn't really say much about it in the actual episode itself. So, you know, you're still in rarefied air there.
Well, and it was actually funny the way that it went, because I had watched that episode and I figured they're going to do the same thing. They've got this huge crowd of fans. They've got a bunch of us, of former racers, and we were kind of all, you saw how everybody was kind of spread out and almost like a horseshoe shape. And we were standing in there, and all of a sudden, Bert, the executive producer, comes over and grabs me and Rob and pulls us out of the crowd and moves us up front. And then I thought, okay, I get it. We won the first season. He wants to kind of put us forward there. Then Phil starts going through his opening spiel and turns around and says, Rob and Brennan are here. So yeah, that was fun for us.
Yeah, that's really fun. Did you have a moment of panic that they might be making you race?
Well, actually, the funny story with that is Rob's girlfriend having to text him, like, yeah, how's it going down there? And Rob pulls out his phone real quick and just texts her and just says, can't talk right now. They're actually using us, and puts his phone away. And then we went through all, you know, that Phil runs through his thing a number of different times, and they do it from different angles. And of course, during the about half hour before he got back to her again, she actually thought for at least a minute, she's like, I wonder if that means that they're going to be off racing. She's like, maybe I'm not going to see my boyfriend for a month.
Yes. Well, everybody talks about, like, they talk about it more about Survivor, but it does come up when we're talking to the fans about Amazing Race. They say they want to see an all winter season. So how do you like your chances in an all winter season?
Well, I guess I can answer that from two perspectives. One, first, about whether we would even get on the show, and then second, how we would do racing. I've heard people talk about that ever since there's been, I guess, 11 seasons where you've got 11 winners and you could start from there. And I know at the beginning, let's be honest, a lot of times the winning teams aren't the most exciting teams, because in order to win, you've got to have a good teammate, you've got to play well, maybe there's not a lot of drama. And so I think for a long time, that's why they wanted to go with, when they did, a couple All-Stars, and they did it with some of the teams that were a little bit more of a standout team, because it is reality television. It's not necessarily a sporting event. But now, 27, and I know they're casting season 28, so 28 seasons in at least, you're going to be able to pick 11 teams, and you can come up with some good ones. So so that's the problem, is you're going to have some disappointed teams that don't get to do the race. Now, people always tell me, they're like, well, of course they're going to take you. You were one of the you were the first winners. But at the same time, the last few All-Stars they've done, they always seem to take from recent seasons. I don't know. I think if they really did do a full winner's edition, I think we'd have a great shot, because people do remember us because we were the very first season. So there's just something about us that makes us memorable for being that. At the same time, we're not quite the same demographic we were back then. We were a couple of young 20-something guys. Now we're both in our 40s, although we're both in great shape. I've traveled a ton since then. So just from a practical travel standpoint, I think I've gotten a lot more experience than I had when I went on the race. And so I think when it comes right down to it, we're both still in great shape, both smart guys, both still really, really close friends. In fact, it's been so many more years now, I feel like I know Rob so much better than when we raced the first time. I actually think we would have a really great shot of winning a champions edition.
Yeah. I like your chances too. And it's funny that you say that the team that wins is not always the most exciting team, because we have a running joke, like every season when we pick our winners around here, I always just pick the most boring team. And I've been right, like, I think 3 times out of 5. So
I get it. And we always heard that even during our season. Of course, they did it also. They took 2 other teams from our season. I know you were talking about seeing Frank at the starting line of season 25. Everybody liked him. And out of about the final 5 teams, we probably were the team that people didn't remember as well, because we just didn't fight a lot. We didn't get lost. We didn't do the things that make great reality television.
Yeah, it's funny, because the teams that kind of don't think about the cameras, I think they have an advantage, because they're just thinking about racing, and it doesn't make them particularly interesting because there's not much going on around them. But I think that does help you in the end.
That's true. I think maybe the problem now would be, now that I know how reality TV works, I definitely would be thinking about the cameras a little bit more. And who knows, maybe that would end up slowing us down. I don't know.
Yeah, it is something. It is something that's occurred to me. Like, you can see some teams when they start out. I think by the end, everybody's kind of used to the cameras being there. But when they start out, some of them are really, really conscious that the camera is on them all the time. And it's funny to watch them get more comfortable as time goes on.
Well, and I do know that I know Bert Van Munster, the executive producer, he's never been a fan of doing the All-Star type seasons. And that's one of the main reasons, is he likes when teams go on, have never been on television before, and they're more worried about the race. They really don't know. Now, obviously, there's been so much reality TV over the years, people have kind of figured it out, but at the same time, they're still newbies. And when you go to the All-Star seasons, people have done it before. Now they know what to say or what to do, things that they're trying to get more airtime and that kind of thing. And sometimes that takes away from real the rawness or kind of the newness of the race. And so I think that's one of the reasons that they haven't done a lot of that with race until CBS says, hey, we need you to do an All-Star season.
Yeah, I say 3 is about 2 too many. So with Bertram. Yeah, so let's go back to the starting line. When you saw all the teams up there, did any of them strike you, like, from the first time you saw them as early front runners?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, of course, all I've watched so far is the premiere, so I'm not going to remember all the names. But you've got the 2 guys who won the first leg. And going back to when we were talking before about some of the winners not being the most exciting, of course, you go back to the early seasons, and a lot of the young guy friends teams that won, just like me and Rob. And so for a long time, they stopped casting them. And every once in a while, they may take a risk on putting a team on again, and they might end up winning. And so you look at the 2 of them, they're young, they're strong, they're physically fit. Obviously, they're really good when they got to that volleyball challenge. And sure enough, they end up winning the first leg. So, you know, if you got to put your money on somebody, I think you got to look at them right out of the gate.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And I was going to ask if that had changed at all, like now that you've seen the teams in action, but I think you're right. There wasn't a lot of surprises there. Like, they looked strong and they are strong. Do you think that physical strength is the most important attribute that you need to do well in the race?
I don't think it's necessarily the number one attribute that you need. I really think communication with your teammate is number one. And the puzzle challenge was a great example. You had teams that where kind of one person kind of took over and they did the puzzle almost on their own. Then you had teams that were kind of fighting as they were trying to do it. And one of the strengths I think Rob and I had, we were young and physically fit, but at the same time, we knew what each other's strengths were. There were times where Rob took over. There were times when I took over. And I think that's a really, really important part of the race. Now, the physical is, of course, important as well, because the race, even though it's pretty frantic when you're watching it on television, there's a lot of downtime when you're traveling, you're on planes, all that. But the times when you are having to move quickly and it is frantic, and most of the things that you do see on TV, being able to run a little bit faster, or going back to what I was just talking about, the puzzle and the volleyball challenge is a great example. One of them was physical, one of them wasn't. If a team was really good at the physical one, they were able to get through that really quickly, and that was an advantage. So I don't know if it's number one, but just having that little bit of an advantage of being a physically fit, a physically stronger team, and just look at the history of race, it definitely does help.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So do you think these guys are contenders to win the whole thing?
I think they are, but who knows after one episode, who knows what their team communication is going to be like, who knows how they're going to do when they get to some of the more mental challenges. And who knows, of course, we know that they always have some needle in a haystack type challenges, and there's just a lot of luck there. So I think, obviously, after the first leg, the front runners, because they won the first leg, they now have their best pass. But, of course, you never know.
Yeah. Yeah, and dumb luck even played a role for them at the very beginning when their bike broke down in the middle of the course. So I could
How lucky for them that in the end it was of no consequence, because either they were first, or I guess in the challenge, either you were first and you got on the one plane, or you were anywhere from second to 11th, those were all the same. So I think that's why when they got to Phil, they weren't that upset, because they realized, okay, we didn't get on the first plane, but we're still getting on the second plane with everybody else. So that was definitely the kind of thing that could have hurt them badly, because who knows, you don't know with editing, how much further behind the other teams that they were. If that was some other challenge near the end of the leg, that could have been their demise.
That's true. There could have been, anything. You really don't know. Now, the interesting thing that I've noticed over the years is that they've moved away from having, groups of people on two different flights, like, and having the flights be a big deal. Like, they've either stuck everybody on one plane, or half the teams end up so far behind the other half that it kind of becomes inconsequential. And I think in your seasons, it was a lot more about who could get the best flight. And now it's almost like spoon-fed to them. Have you noticed that as well?
Yeah, and that's one thing I know that just in kind of listening to what fans have had to say over the years, that's one of the things that the fans don't like as much, because I think it made our race and a lot of the other early seasons, it made it more of a challenge. And in particular, actually, I can speak to how the rules worked. What made our season, I think, harder than any others, the way ours worked is you research flights. If you were having to go, well, for example, I remember one of the hardest ones for us was we were going from India to Thailand, and we all got there close to each other, probably within a couple hours. The final five or six teams that were left at that point all got to the airport, and you had to research all these flights, and there weren't that many. And once you picked a flight and you purchased that flight, you could not make a change. They changed that starting even in the second season to where you could make changes. And so, of course, they did that. And I think the reason they spoon feed even more now is we all know that the worst thing that can happen just from a television standpoint is for a team to get so far behind, or teams to get so far behind, that the teams aren't all bunched up for every leg. And so that was the problem, is if somebody got on the wrong flight and they ended up so far behind everybody else, they just don't want that to happen. So I think that's why they do so much more spoon feeding of the transportation now, so that they can keep teams close to each other, and that in the end, the travel isn't as important as what's actually happening when they're doing the challenges. And they want to keep teams that, hey, they're all there at the same time, you know, what's going to happen? And that's better television than, oh, one team got on the wrong flight and now they're behind everybody.
Yeah, it's funny. There's kind of two schools of fans when it comes to that. Like, some people hate the bunching and think that people should be allowed to get as far ahead as they can. But I think a lot of people understand the logistical sense that it makes to have that in there.
Yeah, and I think the people who don't like the bunching, and I like them, they're thinking about it from the contestant standpoint. And I can tell you right now, it was super, super frustrating when you would get a great lead on teams and then get to some task where you got bunched up. But there really are two reasons why they have to do it. One is they do have to keep the teams close to make it exciting, because it's reality television and they want to keep people tuning in. But on the other hand, they also have to keep them close just from a production standpoint.
Oh, sure.
Still can't be at two places at the same time. So if you've got one team that gets so far ahead and they're, say, completing leg number 9, while another team is still completing leg number 8, still can't be there at the mat for both of them. So that's why they have to keep everything tight, so that production all moves with the racers all, for the most part, at the same time.
And I think that was the lesson that Phil learned in season 2 when he ended up having to wait on the mat for 19 hours. I think was
exactly. And now that would never happen in the race nowadays.
That's true. Like, if he's there for 3, it's a pretty far spread.
Well, and actually, that I was thinking, I rewatched the episode before our call today, and I was thinking about that when Phil came walking up to eliminate the girls. I thought to myself, usually at this point, and it doesn't seem like they were so far behind that he would have had to do that. My guess is they had to get out of there to get to the next place for the wherever they were starting the leg or whatever he had to do. And that's exactly why I thought he probably did it. It was like, all right, let's go get them eliminated. They're going to be out. You got to get on to the next stop.
Yeah, he's only really ever done that to people before if they are hours and hours behind.
Yeah, exactly. Usually, I mean, let's think back about when he did it. Almost every time Phil does that, it's completely pitch black because the team's taken so long to do whatever the task was. Of course, he did say to the girls, the sun's still up or something like that, but it was close. But yeah, I felt like that was earlier than usual, and it was probably because of production.
Yeah. Do you think we're going to see a lot more of that now? Like, is the last team, I remember in your season, you didn't even see Phil unless you were the last team. Maybe now it's going to be, you don't get to go to the mat if you're the last team.
Well, I guess the only way that'll work really well is I guess it happens a lot of the time now that I think about it, but I was going to say when the pit stop is close to where the last challenge is, because you saw that a lot of people took cabs, but the guys who won, they actually hoofed it and got there on foot. So I guess if it's close, it's not too far for Phil just to head out there and say, let's get this leg over with, you guys are out, on to the next one.
Yeah, it's not, I think, as I recall, it's not very far to that lookout. I've not actually been to that lookout, but I stayed on Copacabana a few years ago, and it seemed like the whole thing, like the whole beach, they said is 2 miles long, and they were kind of in the middle, and that little lookout is kind of on the other end of it. So I think a few teams did that. I think the mother and son also ran it because the cab wouldn't pick them up in their swimsuits.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, but it is a new era of, I think Phil's getting a lot more hands-on these days. Like, the last few seasons, he's done this thing where he's hanging out at the challenge as they're completing it in the background. What do you think of that?
I really like that for a couple reasons. I think it's fun for Phil because, let's be honest, 27 seasons later, I'm sure he loves the travel, but at the same time, it's probably like, okay, been there, done that, in doing all the stand-ups that he does when the other teams aren't around or before people get there. So it's probably kind of fun for him to actually be out there while teams are competing and saying whatever he has to say. But at the same time, I like that he gets to showcase his personality some. Certainly, like you said, on our season, you didn't see him much at all. He was just there to introduce a few of the tasks, and he only met the last team, on the mat. So we didn't see him. We didn't get to see his personality a lot. But Phil, he's a funny guy. He's super nice. He's super outgoing. And I think a lot of people think he's kind of I won't say quiet, but maybe kind of subdued, because he comes across that way sometimes on the show. But they really have let him interview teams a lot more on the mats in recent seasons. Now you get to see him out there. And, of course, people often compare Phil and Jeff Probst. And having met them both in real life, and Jeff has much more personality on the show because he gets to sit there and interact with the teams during tribal council. But Jeff's actually the quieter guy in real life. Phil's a really fun guy. In fact, last year we played there was an amazing race soccer team in a tournament. It was like a television industry tournament. We were raising money for charity, and Phil played on the team. And my girlfriend at the time, she said afterwards, she goes, "Hey, Phil, he's so much more fun than he is on the show. He's like the life of the party. He's awesome." And so I like the fact that he's getting to show that a little bit more now on the show.
Yeah, he is. I have met him one time, but that was actually at the starting line a year ago. And the thing that struck me, like, he was ready to stay there all morning and take selfies with every single person who wanted one. And I thought that was really fun. And I would guess he probably did that at the starting line this time as well.
Yep. In fact, I read an interview with him where he talked about how much he loves having everybody there because it just adds this new dimension. There's a great energy. And of course, Phil's making jokes the whole time. And he's a very personable guy, and he loves to meet fans. He tells me that he's always having to, when he's walking places, people come up to him and ask him to eliminate them. So he has a lot of fun with it.
Why would you ever ask him to eliminate you? Wouldn't you want him to tell you that you won?
I have no idea, but he didn't say that. He said it's always eliminating. I'm sure he's had somebody do it otherwise, but I guess the majority is getting eliminated.
Yeah, I would want him to tell me that I'm team number one, but that's just me. So I'm really hoping that we see a lot more of this let the public come to the starting line, because I'm not sure what purpose it serves to put them all in a closed set.
You know, it is interesting. It's interesting to me that they do it at all, because going back to my season, it was like the FBI was guarding where our start was, and that nobody was around. And, the biggest difference back then, and I know they did the same thing with Survivor, both Survivor and Race, back then, they kept all the contestants. They wouldn't let us talk to anybody. I was going to say sequester, but that's not the right word. I mean, we had to go home to our normal jobs, but we weren't allowed to do any publicity. We didn't do anything. And the reason they did that is they wanted the public to think almost that it was live. So when a team got eliminated or when somebody got voted off Survivor, all of a sudden, boom, the next day they show up on the national media, on whatever interviews they were doing, television shows and so forth. And it's like they just got back from wherever they were the night before, even though the show had been filmed months before. As a matter of fact, on our season premiered September 5th, 2001, 6 days before 9/11. And so my mom actually got calls from a few of her friends that asked, "Well, what's going to happen with Brandon on the Amazing Race? You know, he's off in South Africa or wherever he is right now." And she goes, "No, he's safe in his home in Los Angeles. They finished that about 5 months ago." So it was very secretive back then. And of course, now with the rise of social media and a lot of the people that go out and actually try to figure out where the starting line is, even when it is secret, and they kind of spoil the locations and so forth, I think they've kind of just given in to the fact that people are going to find out. And of course, it really is only the super fans who are going to go onto the internet and learn what the real details are of what's going on. So they know that that 95% of the people watching the show, they're just going to tune into the show every week. They're not going to have any idea what's going on. And so they're okay with that kind of stuff. They're okay with people being at the starting line or maybe seeing them in other locations when they're traveling around the world. And I thought it was interesting that at the end of the episode, they actually showed this season on Amazing Race, and they showed a bunch of the different teams. And if you paused and kind of watched and saw the locations, you could probably figure out some of the teams that are going to make it far. And they haven't done a lot of that, but I think they've just kind of embraced that it makes it more exciting for the 5% of fans who really do want to know everything they can about the race. And then the rest of the people are just going to figure it out as they watch every week.
Yeah. And you know, it's nice that they're finally acknowledging that 5% exists, because I think for a long time they were just trying to pretend they weren't there.
Yeah, very true. They pretend that they weren't there, or they just did everything they could to almost shun them.
Yeah.
And those were the strongest fans that they had.
Yeah, and I love, like, the last few seasons, I think, like, even when they're doing weird stuff like the blind date twist, they're always trying to work in little references. And one thing I know, and I can kind of give this away because it did show up in the mainstream media, Phil told our own Josh Wigler in an article for Parade Magazine that they're actually going to revisit a few locations that you were actually in season one.
Yeah, I was really excited about that. I forget where I heard it. Maybe it was through production, but I heard somebody use the word throwback to go into some of the places for season one, and I didn't know what that meant. But then there was, I think, like about a minute and a half preview that CBS put out that was I was able to watch it on YouTube, and some of those were also shown in that in the little preview at the end of the first episode, and it looks like they actually go to a lot of the places we went on our first two legs. I mean, the very first leg in Zambia, Africa, when we went to Victoria Falls, looks like they go to Victoria Falls. And the big task during that leg was there was this huge, people called it a bungee, but it was actually this like giant swing into this gorge. They do that exact same task. They showed a shot of the Arc de Triomphe in Notre Dame where we went on our second leg. So I'm really interested to see whether they're just going to go to those locations or they're actually going to say, this is a throwback from season one. And now I'm going to make a guess. I'm going to guess they don't acknowledge it because otherwise they might have for the fast forward on this first leg for the Rio hang gliding. They did that on season two of Race and that wasn't mentioned. So they're going to do some of the same tasks, but I don't know if they're going to actually acknowledge that those were tasks from earlier seasons.
Yeah, it's the thing I'm wondering is how much of that can they get away with? I mean, again, I think it's only a small minority of people that have seen all 27 seasons, but if they just kind of threw a leg up there that was lifted wholemeal from the original season, like, do you think they can get away with that and not mention it? Or is everybody going to be like, you recycled the leg? And you know,
that's a good question, because, of course, they have done tasks before where, I forget what they call, maybe they even called it a throwback. It was something like that.
Switchback.
Like famous. Yeah, a switchback. Yeah, there's the famous hay bale one from season three where the girls were out there while the girl, because it was a roadblock and it took her like 10 hours or something like that. And they redid that one. So I know they've done that a few times over the years, and they certainly did acknowledge that it was coming from a previous season. So if they were to do, well, like you just mentioned, if they go and do our full leg, that was the first leg ever, I would certainly think that then they would mention it. If they're just going to throw in a couple tasks during a leg that are the same as us, maybe then they don't. But if it's a full rehash of an entire leg, I think they would definitely say something about that.
Yeah, I felt like the biggest nerd ever in season 24 when they did basically an entire leg that they lifted from Amazing Race Australia. And I'm thinking nobody else in the entire country is going to pick up on that. And I should just shut up and let it happen.
Wow, that's pretty amazing that they did that. I guess that is a tip of the cap to the producers of the Australia version that the originals, the Americans, come out and do the same leg.
Yeah, and you see a lot of the same tasks. Like, there are, I think, 13 different international versions now, and when they go to a particular place, sometimes it's even the exact same place and the exact same task, and it adds a new dimension, I think.
And I guess that makes it easy for production. Let's be honest. In the end, as much as we love the television show, for them, it's just their job. So whatever can make it easier, if somebody else did it before, but it wasn't the same version, then let's do it that way.
Yeah. And you already have that location. You know that those people are going to treat you okay. It takes a little guesswork out of it. I don't have a problem with it.
Yep.
All right. So what would you most be looking forward to seeing if we're going to visit a whole bunch of your season one haunts? Like, what's going to be the best thing to see?
That's a really great question. Now, obviously, they gave a couple away because I know they're going to be there in Zambia. But, yeah, specifically, actually, you know what I would like to see from the very first leg is, of course, the big bungee swing thing. That was a huge part of our first leg. You can tell by the previews it's going to be a huge part of the leg when season 27 travels there. But Rob and I didn't get to do that because we went for the fast forward on that very first leg. And it was actually a really tough hike down to this place at the bottom of the gorge right by the water called the Boiling Pot. And the way it was edited on our season, it wasn't made to look that difficult. I mean, it was, because they actually had Rob sing a quote. He said something like, that's the hardest thing I've ever done. But they just kind of showed us start the the hike. They showed us get the fast forward, and then they showed us finish the hike. And the reason for that was the camera crew didn't actually even follow us down there. So for the whole time between leaving from there was kind of a sidewalk up at the top where we left from, all the way down to the bottom where there was another cameraman, we were on our own. There was no camera team with us because it was such a hard hike. So I would love, if they're not going to do it exactly the same and make that fast forward, maybe that's a task that all teams have to do. And we can see exactly how hard that hike was. I think that would be kind of fun since I think it was a little bit of a throwaway on our season.
Yeah, in fact, I remembered that because we have some listener questions we're going to get to in a minute. But one of the things had to do with having a fast forward on the first leg. And I remember seeing that, like they show you guys starting down the path and then 5 seconds later, oh, we got the pass. We're coming back.
Yep.
Yep. And
What made it really difficult is, and at least you could have seen this, that we were all wet, because the falls are so huge, they put up this big spray. And, of course, that's why the original clue was, go to the smoke that thunders. So it looks like a big smoke coming off of the falls. So when you get anywhere near the bottom, it was all wet. And we were actually, we walked on a path towards the top. But once you got to the bottom, you were actually walking on pretty big rocks. So the rocks were super, super slippery. So it was actually pretty treacherous. And I remember even thinking, I'm like, we just started this thing. I'm going to have a broken ankle by the end of the first leg. So, it was funny. They show us the beginning, they show us at the end, then they show us, or at the bottom, getting the fast forward, and then they show us finishing. And it's like, oh, what happened in between?
Yeah. Yeah, I think they have to leave a lot on the cutting room floor, especially in the first leg when you're trying to keep track of 22 people. It's kind of insane that you know who anybody is by the end of it.
Yeah, and I think it was on our first leg and on this first leg and most others, you get the teams that are close to elimination, so you get to know them because they've got to focus on them. The first place team, you've got to show them to show that they're going to win. And then you get some of the middle of the pack teams that you kind of like, they step on the mat and you're like, oh, wait, I don't even remember them.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, if they'll have to get their airtime later on.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. So, I mean, we talked a little bit about the bros that ended up in first place. And we talked a little bit about Justin and Diana, who almost got eliminated for going after the fast forward. Did anybody else jump out at you?
Well, I think, of course, we always talk about what, you know, teams are good and bad and who are the strong teams. But I really enjoyed the dancers. There's just something about them. I think their story, I think that'll make a lot of people like them. They seemed like likable, fun guys. And they didn't seem like the strongest racers. Pretty much every time I saw their names, they were in 8th, 9th, or 10th place. But I think that they were a very likable team. I don't think anybody came off as unlikable, and maybe the TMZ girls did a little bit because of what they do, and they kind of played that up some, and they were a little bit smarmy. But of course, now they're gone, so it doesn't matter. But other than that, I really didn't see anybody really stick out. Of course, they did show the cheerleaders quite a bit at the end because they were close to getting eliminated. They showed a lot of emotion. Although I did find it interesting that when their cab driver stopped and made them get out, that the one girl realized right away when the cab driver said, we're here, and she said, no, well, this can't be the right place. I thought that was actually a really good move, even though it didn't work and they still got out of the cab, but she was smart enough not to just completely trust her cab driver and jump out, that she wanted to keep going. Just that one little move actually made me think, oh, this girl's a smart racer. So they finished second to last, but I have a feeling we might see a little bit more of that coming this season.
That's really interesting. I didn't even catch that, but I know one of them has a master's degree, and they said that they're a lot smarter than they look. So it's going to be interesting, I think, to see them. And I love it when an all-female team goes very deep into the race, especially when it's one that doesn't look like they're very strong on their face.
Yeah, and although you've always got the all-girl team that are, you know, the good-looking girls like those two. And I think every one of those teams in Amazing Race history has said, we're smarter than we look. See,
you
always have to take that with a grain of salt.
Yeah, well, I like it when it actually ends up being true.
There you go.
Yeah, the ones I don't like are the ones that say they're going to flirt their way through the race, and that helps almost nobody.
That's very true. In fact, I like it better when they don't say that, but then and every once in a while it will end up happening. You get some guy that maybe helps a little bit more. I don't know if you remember on my season, I think it was the second leg, it was a roadblock. Everybody was up in the Eiffel Tower, and you had to have coins to put into the telescope, because you look through the telescope to find the next clue. And Emily of the mother-daughter team, who was like a cute 21-year-old on our season, she didn't have any coins. And she kind of looked up at the observation deck above her and said, "Do any of you guys have coins?" There was a bunch of guys, and like, they rained down coins on her. And she had plenty. She's like, "Thank you." Like, that wouldn't have worked for me.
Well, you need to find the right girls, I guess.
There you go.
But yeah, it is a little bit of a different, it's a different set of assets, I guess.
There you go.
All right, so let's get into a couple of questions. I asked our Facebook group of Rob Has a Podcast patrons, and these are the people that sponsor the podcast through patreon.com. And if any of you listeners want to get in on this, it's a really great way to get a little bit of the community from Rob Has a Podcast that you may not necessarily get if you're just like sitting in your little iPod bubble all day. We have a Facebook group that's very active, and for as little as like $5 a month, you get access to extra content, and it's a pretty sweet deal. So check out robhasapodcast.com/patron, I believe, if you want more information on that. But anyway, I put out the call for questions, and I got some very specific ones, and I'm gonna start out with Dan Heaton wants to know, what different kind of task would you like to see on The Amazing Race? Is there something that you haven't seen yet that you would like to see? Like, what's your suggestion to Bertram?
Well, I think one of my suggestions, just thinking about it from a racer standpoint, is I don't like the needle in a haystack challenges, because I don't think that those are necessarily, they just don't involve skill. So those ones always get me so frustrated when I watch the show. And the other kind I don't like is where it's kind of like the helicopter task was in this first leg, where teams, you get there in a line and you have to perform the task in a line because there's no chance of passing those other teams. So I don't know if there's anything that I can think of right off the top of my head that I would want to include, but those are the kind of tasks I don't like. I think the race always needs to be where there's some skill involved, and there people can overtake other teams, and it's not just luck of when you happen to have gotten there, or luck and when you're trying to find something in the old needle in a haystack type task.
Yeah, I think the race itself injects enough luck into it that the challenges don't need to add more.
Yeah, and I mean, when it comes right down to it, if I were to pick a type of task I would like, I like the kind of once-in-a-lifetime type experience type task. And, of course, that's what The Amazing Race is all about. You're getting to go to these iconic locations, these beautiful places, and they always do a good job of finding some tasks that are, I mean, let's be honest, some of them are life-changing, because it's just the kind of thing you would never get to do if you weren't on The Amazing Race. So it's almost like I don't think I could come up with a suggestion of something to add in, because they've done a great job over the years of putting those types of tasks in there.
Yeah, I can't remember who it was that, like, one of the racers they interviewed from a past season way back, he had a lot of money and had traveled a lot, and he said, "I want to go on The Amazing Race because I get to do things that I would never get to do even if I was traveling on my own dime and had as much money as I wanted." And I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, and I think it's a very true statement.
Yeah, and on this first leg, I got to be honest, I kind of missed. They usually throw a huge task in front of people right out of the gate that's a once-in-a-lifetime thing, and every team gets to do the crazy thing. And I kind of missed the adrenaline this leg.
I agree. And maybe they were going to – this is just me thinking out loud. Maybe the hang gliding task was going to be a regular task, but they realized that the weather could have been an issue, and they almost had an alternate. And because it was an issue that day, they just made it the fast forward, because like I said, that was a task in season two, and mm-hmm. it was a task that everybody got to do. And it was exactly that. You just saw these people with these giant smiles on their faces, and you're thinking, well, where else are you getting a chance to go hang gliding? They're in Rio, Brazil, doing this absolutely amazing task.
Yeah. Well, kind of related to that, Mike Bloom wanted to know that since you and Rob were able to benefit from the leg one fast forward in your season, what was your reaction to that misfortune?
Well, here's what I always say, that I don't think it was a mistake taking the fast forward on the first leg because we ended up winning the race, so I wouldn't change a thing. But we actually didn't really benefit from it. And in the end, just from an experience standpoint, I actually think we kind of lost out. Because what happened was, of course, the first season, the very first leg, we have no idea how the race is going to work. We didn't understand that there was going to be bunching. We assumed that it would be something where teams would get spread out. So we had just gone through a couple of days before learning the rules, and this thing called the fast forward would let you skip all the tasks. So we thought, well, that's got to be set up so that a team, say, in ninth place could vault everybody and win and go in the first. So we were the very first team to get to the clue where we had the fast forward packet in there. So when that happened, we thought, well, we're in first place. Can this take, if this could take a ninth place team and we move them up front, it's going to take a first place team and give us a huge lead, and we can ride that lead for a few legs. So that's why we decided to do it. In the end, and like I said, we were first. So, you know, who knows, maybe we would have gotten lost looking for the big bungee thing, but assuming we didn't, we probably still would have been in first. And we only ended up winning the leg by like 20 minutes. And so it wasn't a huge, indeed, and that's because it was such a hard hike down to get to it. It took us about the same amount of time to do that as it took Team Guido, who finished second, to do the actual bungee and the zip line and everything they had to do. So in the end, it actually didn't benefit us. And the hike was a lot more difficult and not nearly as much fun as that big, giant bungee was. So I think we actually missed out by taking fast forward.
Yeah, so that's really interesting, because I think the fast forward was originally intended to be more kind of the way you envision, like a ninth place team being able to jump up to first place. But I think in probably the last 7 or 8 years, especially since they stopped doing them every leg, the fast forward has become more of a way like the first place team gets a reward. And I think for Justin and Diana, it looked pretty much like that until they got up there and it turned out to be kind of a zonk prize.
Yeah, that is true, because the few times that they have it is always the team that gets that clue first. They say, okay, we're going to the fast forward, and then nobody else gives it a try. And there may have been those few times where there was a race to it, but you're right. That's about exactly what it is. We're the first team to the clue. We're going to get it's all, like you said, it's almost like a prize. We get to do this, have this fun experience, don't have to worry about anything. We're going to hop on the pit stop mat after that. We're going to win the leg.
Yeah. Okay, so if you were in Justin and Diana's situation and you get this clue and they suggest it might be weather dependent, are you still going to go for the fast forward?
Yeah, I thought about that, and because I really do, when I watch the race, as I'm sure just fans who haven't been on the show before do the same. Everybody thinks about the decisions they've made or would make. But I thought long and hard about that, because we did the exact same thing. First leg, fast forward, we were in first, we went for it. And I think, just having watched all different seasons of the race, I think kind of using that as a backdrop, I don't think I would have gone for it just for that reason. When you're in first place, you'd love to get the express pass, yes, but because you're separating yourself from the pack, there is the chance of what happened to them could happen. And if all the other teams just kind of had, if there were tasks that they could have just moved through and didn't get stuck like the puzzle was, they certainly would have been out. And the fact that you're first there, no matter how bad you are at whatever the upcoming tasks are, you would really have to be bad for 10 teams to pass you. So I think just from a play it safe standpoint, I don't think that we would have ended up going for it. Although at the same time, first thing you're going to do, you're going to look up and say, it's a gorgeous day out here. Mm-hmm. This is great. And of course, and that's kind of exactly what Justin did. And of course, it ended up biting him in the butt.
Yeah, but I'm so glad that didn't end up eliminating them. I think that would have been heartbreaking, especially knowing how much they love the show.
Yeah, I think in the end, it very much endeared them to everybody, and it makes them one of the more likable teams. But just like we were talking about earlier, I think they definitely are one of those super fan teams. They've been watching the show. Now here they are getting to have the experience of a lifetime, and to be the first team to go, I'm sure would have been absolutely devastating for them. Whereas the TMZ girls didn't seem to be quite as disappointed.
Yeah, it's true. I think the TMZ girls got what they wanted to get out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we've joked for a long time that a lot of the teams that come in saying they're super fans end up going home very, very early on. But I think that might be more that teams that go further have more of a story, and you end up with these teams that you don't have much you can say about them because they go out so early. So those are the super fan teams. So it'll be interesting.
I agree. I mean, I think at this point, I mean, maybe super fans a strong term for all the teams, but I'm going to guess that most people that are on the show are all fans of the show. I think in the early days, you had a lot of teams that got cast, like the casting directors, and found them at the movies or in the mall or something like that, and thought, oh, it's somebody with an outgoing personality, and that's how they ended up on a show, and they've never seen it before. But I think even at this point, even when you are pulling people off the street, a lot of times they are fans of the show. As a matter of fact, I got a chance to meet Tyler, who won the last season of Race, at a premiere party for this one, and sure enough, he's somebody that moved to Los Angeles recently, ran into the casting director of the show, and she asked him if he wanted to be on Survivor, and he said no, but he had actually applied for the Amazing Race before, and he said, I'd love to be on the Amazing Race. I'd applied, and she goes, all right, and so then you know, he still had to go through the casting process, but that's how he was found. So even though he was one of those people who was found someplace, he was still a fan of the show. So I think that you're right. Maybe they play up the super fans that go off early because maybe that adds to their story versus the people who have a story that's going to be told because they've got the entire run of the show to show them because they're going to be on for a while.
Yeah, it really did kind of surprise me because Tyler said a few things last season that kind of betrayed him as a huge fan of the show, and I had not been expecting that. It made me like him a lot more.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, like he would occasionally, there would be like a piece of strategy that would come up, and you would only know to do that if you had seen the show multiple seasons and paid close attention. And so that kind of made their win a little bit sweeter for me. I didn't love the twist, but I was okay with the winner in the end.
Yeah. I think generally in that season, I think that was the general consensus, was a lot of people didn't necessarily like the twist, but they did like the winning team, and kind of out of all the blind date type teams, people were happy that they won.
Yeah. Yeah. So, let's see. Will Olson, we kind of covered this before, but our good friend Will Olson wants to know, how well would you and Rob do on a modern Amazing Race? Like, assuming you'd never done it before and assuming you're just stepping into this with all new people, with the new style and the new twists, how do you think you'd do?
I think we do really well. Like I mentioned before, we are a little bit different demographic. Although the interesting thing is just both of us have stayed in great shape. For me, I love running or biking different races. Now they're popular now, the obstacle course racing, like the Spartan Race and the Tough Mudder. I do all those kinds of things. Rob, it's interesting. Rob went a few years. Of course, we were known when we were on our season, we were in good shape. Rob actually was in super good shape back then. He just recently kind of gotten back into it, to weightlifting some, and he lives right by this canyon in West Hollywood. He hikes all the time. So we're actually, for being a couple of early 40-somethings, we're actually in really good shape, still super close friends. And like I said before, we're actually closer friends now than when we were on the race. So because we're just friends, we don't have that emotional tie that I think sometimes can hurt teams. And we're both a couple of logical thinking lawyers. So I think you throw us into any race, and I think we're going to be one of the favorites.
Yeah, I like your chances too. Do you have any stories from the premiere party you attended last night? Like, did you meet anybody cool? What'd you find out?
It actually was a little bit of a smaller gathering than I expected. And it turns out it was actually at a bar that's only about 5 minutes from my house. And it's like a regular place that I go to watch sports. It's a sports bar. And as coincidence would have it, it turns out it's the bar that Tyler and Laura went and watched all of their shows last season. It was just kind of a crazy coincidence. In fact, there was an area in the back of the bar. There's two floors upstairs where they would watch. And I told them there's a really good chance that I was here some Friday night while you guys were upstairs watching the show. Because, of course, many people, and I do this a lot of the time, I watch it on my DVR, you know, the next day. And so it was a fun party. It was mainly people from some of the recent seasons. I'm actually really, really good friends with Jeff and Jordan. I think they were on season 16. Of course, I'm Big Brother. And so Jackie from last season of Race, who was just on Big Brother, she was there as well. So it was kind of neat to have some of the overlaps between Race and Big Brother. So I wouldn't say I necessarily learned anything new at the party, but I got a chance to meet some new people.
Yeah, it looked like a lot of fun from the pictures that I saw on social media.
Yep, it was. Of course, the only problem with those types of things is you don't get a chance to watch the show that well because you are meeting new people and you end up chatting the whole time. So that's why I had to rewatch it before we talked today.
Yeah. I learned that over the years, I was thinking back on all the previous seasons and I realized that between like season 11 and season 23, I don't think I actually ever watched a finale because I was always at a party for one.
Yep.
And you never get it. Like you just hear cheering and you see like the finish line. And yeah, I've come home from a lot of those finales and had to like sit down and immediately watch it again.
Yeah. About the only time at a finale party like that, people pay attention when the first place team is about to cross the finish line, like, oh, okay, they won. And then they go back to their drinks or their conversations.
Yeah. Yeah. And even when they are paying attention, it's just like, there's too much going on. It's too much stimulation.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, Brennan, this has been so much fun. Thank you so much for coming on the show and helping me recap the first episode. Where can we find you out in the internet?
Well, good thing about having a little bit of a different name is both on Twitter and Instagram, my handle is just simply my name. So it's Brennan Swain, BrennanSwain. And I post fairly regularly on both of them. So, in fact, I remember when you guys had me on a couple of years, I remember Rob giving me a hard time for saying that I didn't have much of a Twitter presence. I'm not tweeting every single day or multiple times a day all the time, but I'm much more active now than I was back then. So hopefully if people want to follow, there's a little something for them to actually follow.
Great. Well, I'm glad to hear that we inspired you to step up your social media presence because I know that's a really healthy and productive thing for people to do is spend a lot of time on social media.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I think that's why, in fact, I don't think at that point that I was on Instagram. I am now. And I admittedly like the whole picture thing versus just, you know, posting. Well, you can post pictures on Twitter as well. But I actually am a lot more Instagram savvy than I am Twitter, I would say.
Yeah, it is a little bit more interesting. I don't read my Twitter feed, but I will look at my Instagram. So, thank you very much, Brennan. And we will touch base with you on the social media, find out what you think of the season as it goes by. And we want to remind the listeners to tune in. We're going to have a lot of interviews, I think, this season because of the fan throwback angle. I really want to hear from a lot of previous racers about the season. So look forward to a lot more content here on Reality Wrap-Ups. We have, of course, our regular Amazing Race coverage on robhaswebsite.com. And for all of your reality needs, you can find that all on robhaswebsite.com. So thanks, everybody, for tuning in, and we'll see you next week.